Hello, folks, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Feature. I'm your host, Tom Majeur, and I have Dr. Gordon Atkins from Camp Basabo. He's the nature guy. And Dr. Atkins, so good to have you back.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is a part of a series. We have a spring series of migration and a fall series. And this is the last of the spring. We won't get to see you till next fall, Dr. Atkins.
Well, all the birds will be gone through, and we'll just have to wait till they come back.
Oh, fantastic. But this migration, you're going to share some interesting technology, so it's going to be pretty exciting what's going to happen with the rest of the migration. Dr. Atkins, would you lead us in a word of prayer?
Sure. Our Father in heaven, we thank you that we can be thinking about your creation today and talking about some of the neat things that these little tiny birds can do. And you have said in the Bible that you care about even the little sparrow. So, Lord, we thank you that you care so much more about us, and we just ask for your presence to be with us. Amen.
Amen. We're in the last of the spring migration, and if you want to go back and check on the other programs, you find interest in this one and say, I got to have more, you can go to our website. The short acronym is str.fm, or the full version is strongtowerradio.org. Now, who are we going to be talking about in this segment of the spring migration, Dr. Atkins?
It's May, so we have to talk about the warblers.
Okay, I'm glad you told me that.
So warblers are a group of small insect-eating songbirds. So what's a songbird? That's all what we call the perching birds. So the little birds that perch
up in the tree.
Up in the trees, yeah, they're all grouped together. They often have fairly well-developed communication system, their songs, and so songbird. And within the group of songbirds, especially during spring migration, birders are always interesting to see the warblers. There's a lot of them, different kinds. North America, we have about 50 species. There's 111 worldwide. But in a good day, when a bunch of warblers are coming through, and you're in the right place at the right time, it's not uncommon to see 30 or 35 different species of warbler.
Well, that sounds like fun.
One day in May. It is a lot of fun when you hit a warbler wave.
So the birders have a bird list. Do you have a daily list and a life list?
Some people have day lists and county lists and life lists and grocery store lists. They have all sorts. So it depends on what you're really interested in.
So, but that's a highlight.
Yes. That's something like that does not happen all the time. You may not even hit a good warbler wave in the spring if you just happen to sort of miss it. But if you hit the jackpot, it's a lot of fun.
Can we guess at what warbler wave? I assume there's more than other times?
Warblers will migrate in mixed flocks. So it's not just this type and that type. They're all together often. And they'll come in large numbers. When the conditions are right, they'll move through. When the conditions aren't right, you wonder where they all went.
It's all or nothing.
That's right. So birders call it a wave because you don't walk through the forest looking for the birds. If you bump into this, you kind of stand in one spot and they just kind of keep coming and pop from tree to tree, and you're trying to keep up with everything, and someone yells, there's a whatever, and it's a fun time.
It doesn't get any better than that.
That's sort of the ultimate in birding, I think, is hitting a warbler wave.
So, are there many exceptions to these warblers? We know shorebirds seem to be exceptions.
Oh, certainly. There's a lot of different species, and yes, everybody's an individual, but there are some things in general about the warblers. The different species have distinct markings, and they're very colorful, most of them. There's a few that are very drably colored, but yellow and red and bright green and blue, they're a very colorful lot normally. But there's so many of them in a wave, and they're all moving around because they're chasing insects. So they don't last very long in one spot. Just when you think you got your binoculars focused on them, they take off. So,
you look down at your bird book, and by the time you look back, they're gone.
It's gone. Yeah. So it's a challenge to look at or photograph the warblers, but it's also that challenge makes it fun. Just trying to track it all down. So it can be difficult, especially if you're new at it. It's just everything's a blur. But if you are good at sound and you recognize the songs, that helps a lot. You know, there's this maze of movement up there, but if you hear a song that's different from the other ones, then you know what to kind of focus on.
So is that called sound identification or song identification?
Yeah. So in birding, identifying it by sight or by sound is equally legitimate. In fact, for some species, not so much the warblers, but maybe the flycatchers, which would also be coming through about the same time, they're all kind of greenish-gray.
Okay.
But they do sound different. So I'm more confident in identifying a flycatcher by its song than by what it looks like.
You know, to some of our listeners, talking about identifying by their song may seem abstract to them, but they do hear robins and they hear cardinals, so and blue jays. Blue jays, you can't hardly miss a blue jay.
We know the common ones. The difficulty with these guys, they're migrating through for a couple of weeks and they're gone for a year.
So you have to remember it a whole year.
Huh? Yeah, that's the tough part. So,
but there's little tools that you can use.
Sure.
There's some resources online.
There's apps. There's all sorts of ways that you can be kind of practicing before they get here, so that when you do hear them, you say, "I've heard that before."
Well, good. So there is some challenges in identifying, but describe some of the warblers that our listeners might encounter.
Well, they're like I said, there's quite a few of them. Some of them, fortunately, their names make a little bit of sense.
All right.
So something like a black-throated green warbler, that's truly the name, and it has a black throat and it's greenish. Of course, it has some yellow and other things too. There's a black-throated blue warbler. You can imagine what that looks like. Probably the most abundant in some places, particularly if you've got a wet forest, is a yellow warbler, which is yellow.
Yes.
little orange stripes on it for the male.
Now, could you mistake them for some of the other yellow birds?
Certainly. You have to keep in mind what
like
else is there.
The goldfinch.
Yeah, the goldfinch has black wings, so that's a little different. But, in any identification, you've got to rule out the close runner-ups and be sure that you've got the right one.
So just going on that vein, the goldfinches, would they be smaller in size than these warblers?
About the same size.
Okay.
But they have a thick bill for crushing seeds.
Okay.
Whereas the warblers have a very thin bill for catching insects.
Okay.
You got other things. The yellow-rumped warbler is probably the most widespread and the most numerous of all the warblers and actually comes fairly early. So if you're out in the woods and you see 50 yellow-rumped warblers and nothing else, you probably need to come back in a week or two.
Okay.
Because they're the early ones. Some of the warblers are named for people or places, like the Blackburnian warbler. I always know when birders that are with me see that because it's orange and black stripes from its face all down its chest. And when you get that in your binoculars, almost everybody says, "Oh, wow."
Oh, really?
And so I know they found that one. And Tennessee warblers and Connecticut warblers. So there's all sorts of different names. You just have to sit down and look at the pictures and learn the names, kind of like a Facebook for birds, I suppose. And then some are named for where you find them, like the pine warbler that you find almost exclusively, at least in Michigan, in the pine forests. So those are some, but there's many more we don't have time to talk about.
Talk about the migration that's going on right now.
So May is the peak of the spring warbler migration. Right now, the other thing is they're at their peak breeding plumage. Like so many of the other birds we've talked about in other episodes, these brightly colored birds in the fall on their way back do not look the same. They're you can figure them out if you look closely, but this is the time to see a warbler. And the main reason why May is important and catching it early is because you want to see the birds before the leaves come out.
Oh, that makes it easier.
Yeah, because if the tree's covered with leaves and you've got a little bird that's 3.5 inches long that's yellowish-green and the yellowish-green leaves, you can see the problem. So
right.
The early part of migration before the leaves come out is the best time.
Awesome. Now, where are they migrating from and where are they migrating to?
We do have some of the warblers breed in Michigan, but most of the warblers are heading north to the boreal forest. So a little south of the tundra that we've talked about in the last episode for the shorebirds, these are in the boreal forest, the conifers, huge swaths of forest for thousands of miles in northern Canada up into Alaska. So that's where they breed, and they winter in Central and South America and the Caribbean. So
they're travelers also.
They have a long way to go. They have to have insects, so we just don't really get them here in the wintertime in Michigan because there'd be nothing for them to eat. So they have to go far enough south to get insects, but they're going north to the boreal forest to also get insects, but have a lot of great nesting areas.
How long do they lay over in Michigan?
It depends on the weather, and the smaller the bird, the more weather is going to be a predictor of when to see them. It kind of depends, but there's a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And often one weekend.
Okay, well, that's pretty tight.
Yeah, it can be, and it's sometimes I've gone on a birding trip in May and seen hardly anything, and then other times same place. About the same time of year, it's a great day.
They got a places to go, huh?
That's right.
Now, okay, so tell us more about what we've learned about them.
Again, we talked last session about the miniaturization of electronics, these geolocators and satellite. These things are so small now that we can put them on a little warbler.
Wow.
And a warbler weighs about 11 or 12 ounces.
Wow.
So before that, it was just where birders saw the birds, and we kind of made generalizations. But now we can follow individual birds. They, in their migration, they tend to be traveling at about 30 miles an hour. And they fly, they don't fly as high as a lot of the other birds we've talked about. 300 to 3,000 feet is kind of an upper limit, depending on the wind conditions. The windier it is aloft, the closer to ground they'll fly. And a lot of the migration happens at night. Wake up the next morning and we'll see what's there.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So what percentage do we see during the day?
Well, they're in the day, they're out feeding.
Okay.
So you can imagine they've flown all night. They land out of gas. And so they spend the next day or two catching insects. So that's your chance to get out and see them when they're and sometimes when there's not a lot of insects, like you have a cold snap, but they've arrived. I've even seen them walking along the ground trying to catch insects on the ground because they're not flying up in the sky.
Really? So, yeah. What about the two warblers that we are of interest?
Well, I'm interested in all of them, but okay. I wanted to mention something. The black pole warbler has been studied quite a lot. It does a 72-hour nonstop flight.
3 days.
So just a little wee bird can fly 3 days straight. So you can imagine storing fat and, you know, catching food, all the things we've talked about in other episodes. These guys have to do it. They winter in the northern parts of South America, fly across the Atlantic to the East Coast, fly across North America to Alaska, and they stop right through Michigan.
Wow, that's kind of circumvented course.
Yeah. Why they choose the paths they take is not clear. We're just learning what the pathways are. But clearly it has something to do with, you know, wind currents, geography, temperatures, and all that kind of stuff. And then some birds don't fly through, like the Kirtland's warbler that's famous here in Michigan. They breed only in a certain pine forest area of northern lower Michigan.
Which we have a good habitat
for. That's what we have. That's right up where I'm at Camp Asauble in Grayling, Michigan.
So you've got them on your front porch.
Not quite the front porch, but just down the street.
Okay.
Because they need Christmas tree-sized jack pine, and I don't have any right there.
Okay.
Every bird has its wintering location, its breeding area, and its track through the ecosystem to get there. And so each one we have to learn sort of separately.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back after this break, and we'll continue to talking about the warbler spring migration. I'm here with Dr. Atkins, and I'm Tom Mazure.
Strong Tower Radio publishes a monthly newsletter about the ministry's progress and listeners' response. Get the free subscription just by calling 231-468-2087. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back, folks. I'm Tom Mazure with Strong Tower Radio feature. I'm your host with Dr. Gordon Atkins. We were talking about the spring migration of warblers. What is the best time to see them?
Well, this month of May, pretty much the middle of May for most of Michigan, maybe a little later up north because it takes them a while to kind of move forward.
So we get a second chance.
Yes. In fact, a lot of people will do that, bird in the south and then maybe go up to Whitefish Point in the UP and catch them again as they're going by.
So that's migrating bird watching.
Yes. Okay. But morning is always the best time.
Good point.
Almost for all birds, but especially the warblers. They've been migrating at night. It's still a little cold. They need energy, and so they're out trying to catch insects.
Sunrise to what time?
Till noon. It depends on how hot the day is. If it's bright and sunny and warm, things slow down pretty quick. If it's kind of rainy and it doesn't, you know, it takes quite a while to warm up, that means it's taking longer for them to find their insects. They'll be out later. You could potentially find a warbler anytime during the day, but the peak activity is in the morning. And then some a little bit later in the evening, too, it'll kind of pick up again. So right when you feel like having a nap is when they're having a nap.
Okay, good.
Now, the problem with the spring migration is, for these little birds, weather is a big predictor, or a big obstacle, I should say, and so therefore a predictor. If there's bad weather, they're not going to be migrating. They get blown off course too easily. A little bird gets
just tough
hit with the rain.
Yeah, it's just flying against the wind.
Bad weather can kill a bird during migration.
Wow.
Migration is the most dangerous time in a bird's life.
Okay.
And so they do make choices about which days to migrate and which to not. Now, migration itself is set up by time of day. So there are detectors in the eye and the brain that say it's time to move, but they'll hold off if the weather's bad. If the weather's bad for a long period of time, the drive to move
overrides
it, and they got to go anyway. So every spring season migration is a little different from the other. So just because May 12 was a great weekend here last year doesn't mean it's going to be, you know, the possibility is there, but it doesn't always mean that. So it gets a little difficult to decide when the best time is. Now, if you have a job and a schedule and you've only got Saturday, you go out and look for birds, you take what you can get. But
right.
If you have the luxury of choosing your day, well then—
Look at the forecast.
How do you choose? Well, the weather forecast is one thing.
Right.
Okay, you look for a calm night, a clear night. But even then, it depends on what's happened the previous nights and the birds, the decisions they're making, and what weather they encountered further south may have been different than what you had, and so it gets difficult.
But we have new tools.
We have a tool. One of the ways we look at bird migration in general is using radar. We have radar now is sensitive enough, the resolution is good enough that we can—
This is weather for radar that is
It's exactly the same as weather radar, and it's just following the birds. And so—
Are they dedicated?
Little birds, they used to be shared. I think now they're dedicated.
Okay.
I'm not sure about that point in every location, but we can follow individual birds. Now, you can't identify them, which is which. It's a little blip on the screen, like you might— Imagine a flight controller sees a plane coming into the airport and they can see all the other activity.
Or like a fish finder.
Same idea, exactly. So the folks at Cornell University that developed eBird, which is that database we talked about for keeping track of your checklists and seeing where things are, they have something now called BirdCast, like a forecast, but it's birdcast.
So, and you're actually calling that up on your laptop.
I'm pulling that up right now. And I'm looking at last night, and this is live. So it's done live. Of course, it's daytime as we're recording today. So it's not on now, but it starts at sunset, and we'll report what's in the air, what's passed through. You can select either to look at the whole of the U.S. And when I do that, I see that most of the movement was in Florida and up the Carolinas.
At this recording.
At the time of this recording, that was the busy spot. And last night at the time of this recording, it shows 29,600 birds crossed Michigan.
Just they came in and out?
They were flying through.
Wow.
And they just passed Michigan and they're heading somewhere else. So
they didn't stop for us.
We're not even going to see them.
Oh, no.
But it also has a category here. And if you go to BirdCast, go to the migration dashboard. And that just has all of these graphs here that I've got in front of me with the numbers. You can also go to other tools that show a map in color showing the, kind of the movement of birds. But I find this very interesting because the other thing that they report here is the peak migration traffic. So at peak movement, there were 300,000 birds in the sky last night.
Wow, 300,000.
And this wasn't a very good migration night, it turns out. During the peak warbler migration, it's possible to get 6 million birds in the air.
Can't hardly miss them.
Yeah. And you can actually break this down by county.
Wow.
So you can go to your county where you live and see what's going on. So the key, though, is to compare the number of birds that were in the air at night compared to the number of birds that passed all the way through Michigan.
Okay.
And if there's a big difference, that means they had the land in Michigan.
By
and
exception.
Here we are. So I do the math here. About 280,000 birds landed in Michigan last night during migration.
I hope we taxed them. No,
as soon as we're done, let's go out and look for them. Okay, so that can be really helpful because on a colder, windy, stormy day, whatever, these numbers would be way down. But if you watch this carefully, you can get a day where it looks like millions of birds landed in your county. That's the time to go out and see them.
There you go.
They're there, they're hungry, and they're eating.
Watch it just like a weather forecast.
It is just like a weather forecast, and that's BirdCast. If you just type in BirdCast, that'll come up in your search engine and go to the migration dashboard. That's the fun part to watch. And you can watch it through the night. Like, you can start it in the evening and just see, like, not much. Oh, wow, look at the last hour. So it's basically minute-by-minute reporting of what's going on overhead that we normally wouldn't have been able to see at all.
That might encourage you to get up in the morning and go birding.
It does tell you you got a better chance of seeing some birds, yes.
Wow. What about some specific locations?
So, woodlands. Okay. These guys are looking for insects. Almost all of the warblers that we have in North America would be called wood warblers. And that's a family group. The forests are really where they're finding their insects. They're going from branch to branch looking for insects in the buds and so forth. There are a couple of exceptions. There's the common yellowthroat, which likes a marsh. So you'll find them out in a cattail marsh. But most of them will be in woodlands. So which woodlands? Well, just about any woodland.
This is equal opportunity.
In some ways, yes. Let me clarify. If you've got a woodland with a path through it, then you can kind of quietly go through without disturbing the birds. So, you know, some of the parks and the birding areas are set up for that to makes it easy to get around. If you're slogging through the mucky spring leaf litter, that's going to scare away a lot of birds. So some of the established parks and trails are great places. If the woodlands have a body of water nearby, we know here in Michigan that means there's more bugs. They're insect eaters, so think of...
You get the good with the bad. Yeah.
Think of finding the worst place for mosquitoes and go to watch your birds. So you need to bring your insect repellent,
okay?
Because you're going where they're looking for insects. That means the insects are looking for you. So that's one thing to consider. In the forest, though, different species use different parts of the forest. So there's some species like the black burning warbler we mentioned earlier. You're almost always going to find them in the very top branches of the tree. Something like a black and white warbler, you're going to find almost always on the trunk of the tree or some of the large branches. They're acting more like a nuthatch, going along getting stuff in the bark. Others you might find out in the edge. Oven birds, you find them on the ground. You hardly see them up in the trees. So you have to realize you've got to look everywhere in the forest, and you'll find a variety. And that can change with the weather. So if it is cold and it is windy, there aren't going to be insects flying around up on the tops of the trees, and so the birds are going to be down where the insects are trying to hide out. Okay. So it would seem that if you can find a good place where the insects are biting, you've maybe found a good warbler spot.
Great. What about geographical locations that we might go to?
Sure. In southwest Michigan, those forested dunes along the coastline.
Same thing with the shorebirds.
Yeah. Now, instead of looking on the beach, you're looking in the forest on the dunes, or in those forests behind the dunes where there's all those wetlands.
They call them the back dunes.
Yeah. Those can be really great places. But again, remember the insects and the wind. So look for sheltered areas in the forest, a little valley or whatever. If it's not windy, that's a better place to find these birds. Although when they have to, they'll be up there battling the conditions. But find a sheltered spot in the forest. That would be a good spot.
Like Warren Dunes would be a great place.
Yeah, Warren Dunes is an excellent example of that. On the southeast side of the state, a lot of the little town parks that have trees in them become what we call migrant traps.
Okay, explain that.
Yeah, so a migrant trap is some geographic or vegetation reason why the birds are attracted to that spot. A really good example of that might be a peninsula that goes out in a lake, and everything's kind of gets funneled out onto that little point, but it's stormy enough they don't want to fly across the lake, so they're kind of stuck there. So we call that a migrant trap. In urban areas like the Detroit area, so much of it's built up, but the birds are coming through. They're looking for the patch of trees to look for an insect. So the parks and maybe along the lakeshore parks, those become sort of man-made migrant traps because that's the only place where there's forest to try to find their bugs. So even in an urban area, you can still enjoy a warbler wave going through your neighborhood.
And you talk about points, Point Pelee, the famed Point Pelee in Ontario.
So that's not too far. That's just kind of south of Detroit. You go into Ontario and travel a little further south to Point Pelee. That sticks out into Lake Erie. So that's the shortest hop, skip, and a jump across Lake Erie. A lot of the small birds try to avoid traveling over large bodies of water for obvious reasons. And so Point Pelee kind of gives them that shortcut across a difficult part. Further north, you've got Tawas Point State Park here in Michigan. That's a great place. It's also a migrant trap, a little point out onto the lake. It's a shortcut across Tawas Bay, so that's a good spot at the right time of year. In the central part of the state, any forest. The problem with our forests around farms is a lot of the farms use insecticides. That means less insects, so less food.
So it
kind of depends on where you are. But if you get on eBird, you'll be able to see what works and what doesn't.
What about Whitefish Point in the UP?
Yeah, in the UP, Whitefish Point is, again, one of those migrant traps. It sticks out in Lake Superior. They hesitate crossing over, and so things can accumulate there. And over in the Porcupine Mountains in western UP would be another area up towards Copper Harbor.
Well, fantastic. Well, Dr. Atkins, I just really appreciate this introduction to birds and migration. I have two siblings that are very much birders, and I am the least in Israel, but my interest has been piqued, and I'm so glad that we've done this spring migration series. Is there anything that you would like to share as we close?
Well, this is all part of God's creation, and to get out and see it and enjoy it is just a real privilege. And I'm looking forward to the next several days here.
Very good. You've been listening to Dr. Gordon Atkin. He's the nature guy at Camp Asabo, and I'm Tom Majeur with Strong Tower Radio. Join us in the fall for the fall bird migration. Bye now.